We're now looking through Mark's Gospel over the last number of weeks. Hopefully we're getting a sense of how the Word, in its literal sense, understood in the light of the heavenly doctrines, provides us with an invaluable resource in being able to bring us into a fuller understanding of the nature of the inner processes that people go through as they walk a spiritual path to wholeness. Today we will look at the question of fasting brought to the Lord by the disciples of John in conjunction with the Pharisees, who in doing so, we could say their motives were at minimum suspect. But it's a wonderful illustration of how we ourselves question the Lord's operation within our life. And the other side of that is that it is a picture of the Lord's enduring patience in bringing into life His life within us. He brings it into being through taking those things which hinder His life in us and exposing us to them so that we might be able to see them and have them removed by His power. We remind ourselves that the central aspect of New Church spirituality are love to the Lord and love to our neighbour. Understanding this simple truth has the power to transform our lives, our view of the world, and our view of others. For all that we do, say, think and feel needs to be kept in submission to this universal truth of religious expression. This extends to our very relationships that we have with others. Human beings are created to be in relationship one with another. But where these relationships occur without reference to those two great heavenly loves, they become constricting and stifling in nature, having their source in the lower natural love. Relationships are love, and where spiritual loves rule them, they become liberating in every sense of the word. The religious leaders of Jesus' time sought to limit the operation of divine love. It is my hope today, as we look into the word, where we explore this question of fasting, we will see our own tendency to limit the Lord's love within us. But we will also see His patience with us in bringing out our potential. Let us pray. Our first reading this morning is from the book of Isaiah, reading chapter 58, verses 1 through to 12. Cry aloud, spare not. Lift up your voice like a trumpet. Tell my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily and delight to know my ways, as a nation that did righteousness and did not forsake the ordinance of their God. They ask of me the ordinances of justice. They take delight in approaching God. Why, we have fasted, they say, and you have not seen. Why have we afflicted our souls and you take no notice? In fact, in the day of your fast, you find pleasure and exploit all your laborers. Indeed, you fast for strife and debate and to strike with the fist of wickedness. You will not fast as you do this day to make your voice heard on high. Is this the fast that I have chosen, a day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head like a bulrush, and to spread out sackcloth and ashes? Would you call this a fast and an acceptable day to the Lord? Is this not the fast that I have chosen, to loose the bonds of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and that you break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him, and do not hide yourself from your own flesh. Then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your rear guard. Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, "Here I am." If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger and the speaking of wickedness, if you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then your light shall dawn in the darkness, and your darkness shall be as the noonday. The Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your soul in drought and strengthen your bones. You shall be like a watered garden and like a spring of water whose waters do not fail. Those from among you shall build the old waste places. You shall raise up the foundations of many generations, and you shall be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of the streets to dwell in. Second reading is from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verses 18 to 22. The disciples of John and the Pharisees were fasting. Then they came and they said to him, "Why do the disciples of John and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" And Jesus said to them, "Can the friends of the bridegroom fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. But the days will come when the bridegroom will be taken away from them, and then they will fast in those days. No one sews a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, or else the new piece pulls away from the old, and the tear is made worse. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins, or else the new wine bursts the wineskins. The wine is spilled, and the wineskins are ruined, but new wine must be put into new wineskins." We're reading from the Heavenly Doctrines from the work The Arcana Celestia, paragraph 9025. Among the priests and the members of the church, there are those who teach and learn the church's truths from the literal sense of the word. And there are those who teach and learn them from the teachings drawn from the word, called the church's doctrine of faith. The perception of the second group is very different indeed from that of the first. Those who teach and learn solely the literal sense of the word, without guidance from the teachings of the church, grasp no more than matters that concern the natural or external man, whereas those guided by genuine teachings drawn from the Word understand in addition the matters that concern the spiritual or internal man. The reason for this is that the Word in its external or literal sense is natural, but in its internal sense is spiritual. Concerning fasting. If we take the increasing of the Lord's profile in Israel at this time in his life, as our increasing awareness of his operation within our own hearts and minds, then we can see that those classed as scribes and Pharisees, and in the case of today's message, those classed as the disciples of John, are not classes of people out there, but are elements within ourselves. They are elements within our own consciousness. The presence of Jesus within us is the working of divine love, seeking to save what is lost, seeking to restore those connections back to the source of our life. Jesus, we have seen, moves in and out of towns like Capernaum. He moves in and out of people's houses like those of Simon and Andrew and Levi the tax collector. This movement shows us the tireless operation of the Lord's love, of His deepest love, His love for the salvation of the human race, for the salvation of our very own souls. The towns and houses, of course, as we have seen over the last number of weeks, represent those principles or thoughts that we have gathered together and feel comfortable dwelling in. Elements of these psychological dwellings are able to respond to the operation of the Lord's love within. These are enlivened and healed, brought to wholeness. Yet we also see that there is much within us that is not so enthused by Jesus' presence. Elements of self-love, that love that puts self at the center, at the height of all things. And its supporting thought structures find the presence of true love confronting, resulting in a stirring up of the mind, as seen in these questions that are brought to the Lord by the scribes and Pharisees in order to challenge Him. For the scribes, as those who write and interpret religious law, represent our lower reasoning faculties. And these serve the Pharisees, or the selfish motives, who seek to use religion as a means of dominating others and exalting itself to privilege and power. So the scribes and the Pharisees in our reading of the Gospels are not classes of people so much as elements within our own hearts and minds. And we can see this clearly illustrated in the progression of Jesus, or the Lord's desire for our salvation moving within us, giving life to truth as He speaks into us a new way of living and being. And we also see, as this new life and light begins to advance in us, the exposure of that which would keep love out. Such effects in this advance can now be clearly seen in this chapter of the Lord's life. When we look back in this chapter, we see that in the first mention of the scribes in verse 8, they are said to reason silently. They reason within their hearts. And they reasoned within their hearts, questioning Jesus' right to forgive the sins of the paralytic man, which we looked at a few weeks back. But nothing escapes the embodiment of divine love, for it perceives their silent reasoning, and by means of truth from the Word, gently calls it out into the open, such as His concern for our spiritual well-being. So He seeks to make known to us the depths of our own hearts, that in discerning the quality of our thoughts and affections, we might see the reasoning that opposes the establishment of heavenly love within us. When we are able to see this, then we can seek the Lord's help, seek His aid to overcome such obstacles. Progressing through in that chapter, we see in verse 16 that Jesus is said to be eating and drinking with tax collectors and sinners. Once again, we see that the scribes are present. Only this time, they're not just described as scribes, but they are described as the scribes of the Pharisees. This slight change in description illustrates a fundamental shift in our consciousness as the Lord advances with His love within us. For now, the source of that which was previously silent reasoning is being exposed and is seen to be related to selfish motivations, those motivations that stem from the love of self at the center. the particle, the Greek particle of, in the phrase, the scribes of the Pharisees, spiritually could be rendered the reasoning born of self-love. This is now becoming exposed. We see also that the reasoning is no longer silent or within the hearts, but it takes the form of actual speech. This shows us a progression, as that which lay within as silent reasoning now becomes more and more overt and exposed. And it is interesting to note that this speech is not yet directed toward the Lord. It is directed toward the disciples. It is, however, Jesus who answers. Then in our reading today, we see that it is not the scribes who come with the Pharisees to question Jesus, but the disciples of John the Baptist. And we are going to be looking at how this represents an advance of the exposure of that negative side within us in a moment. But just to jump ahead, in progressing this theme of progressive exposing of the thinking within us that is opposed to the Lord's love, if we move to verse 24, which we will be looking at next week, where the Lord declares himself to be the Lord of the Sabbath, we see that the scribes are no longer mentioned, nor are the disciples of John present, but there are only the Pharisees. The Pharisees are the only ones mentioned here in bringing a challenge to the Lord. And we also see that they no longer direct their attention toward his disciples, but confront him directly. So it is that the Lord slowly draws out the real issue until it stands before the divine love itself. But in order to understand what is happening around this question of fasting that we're looking at today, we need to understand what the disciples of John represent. In the second sermon of this series on Mark, we looked at the spiritual meaning of John the Baptist. John was the forerunner to Jesus. He represents that which prepares the way for the coming of the Lord in people's lives. Now the Lord enters people's minds and makes himself known to them by means of his word. The word, the heavenly doctrines declare, is the Lord. Jesus represents the Lord, represents the Word as to its inner spiritual sense. And John, as one who points people to the Lord, represents the Word as to its literal or physical or material sense. John teaches external obedience and observance, whereas Jesus teaches truths that show us directly how we can faithfully love our neighbour. John is a literal understanding of spiritual things. It is a perspective of spiritual things very much built on a physical or material understanding. A disciple is one who is a learner. In fact, the Greek word for disciple can be faithfully translated as learner. Disciples of John, then, are learners of John. They imbibe his teaching and seek to imitate him in life. A disciple can be thought of as an extension of their master's teaching. They are not the same as their master, but embody a unique expression of their teaching. The disciple is also one who has subjected themselves to another as their master, making the relationship of one of ruler and subordinate. A John the Baptist understanding exists where the understanding of the word is dominated by a physical or material view of the word, a material framework out of which the word is understood. So then what are the disciples of John spiritually speaking? Well, if John is a physical or material understanding of the Word, then His disciples must be that which is derived from that understanding and also is subordinate to it. Next question is, what is it that is derived from the Word, from such an understanding? Surely it must be our ideas about the Lord and spiritual things. The collection of ideas that are held about such things could be called our doctrine or teaching, the thing we hold to. The disciples of John, then, are ideas people have about God and spiritual things derived from a literal understanding of the Word. When people's understanding is bound to the physical material plane, the Word is understood in a natural sense-based way. What does this look like? Well, heaven and hell are understood to be places rather than states. Hell, for example, is literally taken to be a lake of fire and brimstone into which the Lord God casts people after He has judged them. God is seen to be one who gets angry and seeks revenge. He is seen to play favorites with some people being held as the elect and others as damned. These ideas and similar ideas to them are a literal understanding, understanding spiritual things from a natural perspective. For those tied to understanding the Word within a material framework, such ideas form the basis for their doctrine or teaching about spiritual realities. And this has a profound effect on the way they in turn view the world, but more importantly, how they view other people. A material understanding of spiritual things can only take a person so far, after which they become bound up and spiritually imprisoned. And we read of the effects of this in the story of John's imprisonment in chapter 1. But it takes time for material ideas to give way to a more spiritually enlightened understanding. The tragedy is that many coming to the Bible as a source of spiritual life and expression find the harshness of the literal sense difficult to take. They find that they are unable to reconcile the picture of God they find there with their understanding of what a loving God should look like and how such a God should act. Without access to teaching regarding the inner spiritual sense of the Word, many seekers feel they are left with no choice but to reject the Bible and seek spiritual nourishment elsewhere. These are often incredibly courageous souls, whose honest search for truth leads them into the barrenness of a wilderness-type experience. Perhaps it's worth giving consideration to the possibility that if people who walk such a path as this had access to a deeper understanding of the nature of the Word, of the Lord's true character, or to others around them who could support them through the struggle of moving from a material understanding to a spiritual understanding of the Word, we would all be much richer for the experience. Perhaps this is a ministry we as a new church expression of spirituality could look to more readily and actively support. However, all of us carry material ideas about spiritual things to some degree or another. None of us are exempt. These ideas eventually become an obstacle, blocking the progress of the Lord's increasing our capacity to love more appropriately. So it is that the presence of the Lord draws out of us that which hinders His life in us. These material ideas form the basis for literalizing the Word to form a religious expression that places its emphasis on external rites, rituals, and traditions. The embodiment of this was represented by the religious leaders of Jesus' day. The religion of the Israelites had become merely a shell of true spirituality. Hence the challenge they brought to Jesus concerning the religious observance of fasting. The issue here is not about fasting. It's much wider. It's about the class or type of expression that fasting represents as a whole. It is about the externals of religion taking precedence over its internals, over love, mercy, and compassion, of those true aspects of any God-centered religion, loving the Lord and loving our neighbor. Notice that while the question is directed to Jesus, its content is about the religious practices of his disciples. The question, why do the disciples of John and the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast? Love, mercy, and compassion are not qualities we would associate with the disciples of John or the Pharisees. John is described as the last of the Old Testament prophets, one whose message is in the spirit of Elijah, a man whose spiritual expression was severe in its rejection of what would have been considered the normal comforts of life. He lived in the desert. He ate locusts and honey. He clothed himself in rough, unprocessed garments. And I don't doubt that he required the same of his disciples. It is a spiritual expression that is ascetic in its quality and could be said to be characterized by being hard on oneself, judgmental of others, and unforgiving. Externally, this form of religious expression can be seen in the extreme forms of religious fundamentalism, which always has its roots in a material understanding of spiritual realities. Sincere as adherence in such expressions of faith may be, they are very vulnerable to being hijacked by unscrupulous leaders who are able to harness their material understanding of spiritual things to advance their own power and control over others. This process is illustrated here with the association of John's disciples with the Pharisees. The Pharisees represent the operation of self-love, which is defined in the heavenly doctrines as the love of dominion or the love of dominating others. This love is able to take hold of a misplaced understanding of spiritual things and use it in an attempt to call into question the deeper spiritual understanding represented by Jesus' disciples. If John's disciples represent doctrine or teachings founded on a purely material understanding of the word, then Jesus' disciples represent doctrine or teachings founded on a spiritual understanding of the word. These two ways of understanding cannot be reconciled. They relate to different levels of being. John himself bore witness to this fact when he said, "He must increase," speaking of Jesus, "and I must decrease." And also, speaking of Jesus, he said, "He who comes from above is above all." Then again, speaking of himself, states, "He who is of the earth is earthly and speaks of the earth." But again of the Lord declares, "He who comes from heaven is above all." This incompatibility is also illustrated in Jesus' response describing the unsuitability of new cloth on an old garment and of new wine in an old wineskin. Yet for a time, these two understandings exist almost side by side. And what we see described here is the process whereby a new spiritual understanding is implanted and that old material understanding of spiritual things is discarded. Understanding this process can assist us to help and support others through this transition. So let's take a clearer look at this in regard to our own inner psychological processes. I've stated that the extreme fundamentalist expressions of religious faith have their roots in a material understanding of religious things or spiritual things. And while these movements find an external expression of which most in the new church would feel they had little in common with, we need to remember that every external expression is grounded in ways of thinking to which all people are vulnerable, to which we all are vulnerable. Intolerance, bigotry, criticism, unforgiveness, internal account-making, revenge-seeking, self-righteousness, being judgmental of others, none of these are the exclusive characteristics of extreme fundamentalism. They are, however, the properties of self-love which is present within us all. This story from Mark's Gospel shows us that the Lord is constantly seeking to make us aware of the operation of these things within us so that they can be separated from us. The voice of the scribe, the voice of the Pharisee, the voice of John's disciples are those voices within our own minds that seek to discredit the operation of love, of the Lord's salvation within our own lives. Their presence, if left unchecked, will mean our spirits will be starved of love or goodness from the Lord. This is the spiritual meaning of the fast John's disciples and the Pharisees were engaged in here. To fast is to abstain from nourishment, to keep from our bodies the goodness of foods it needs. Self-love questions the presence of true love, seeking to accuse it of evil and keep it at a distance, that in maintaining distance, it might maintain its accursed life and not be exposed for what it is. Those who seek to bring the Lord's goodness to others through bringing the truths that they have from the Word to life, through living them out, are here described as the friends of the bridegroom. You see, these disciples of Jesus, they could not fast because goodness, love itself, was present with them. They have within them those who seek to live the life of the truth they learn, those who seek to bring them into the practical realm of our relationships with others. These people, which hopefully is us all, these people are continually being nourished. They're continually receiving the Lord's goodness, continually receiving His love and His truth. These are those who choose the Lord's own fast that we read about in Isaiah, who abstain from evil and seek to do good. May we seek such a fast as this in bringing the joy of the heavenly life to others. Amen.